Harvard's Nancy Etcott wrote in her book, Survival of the Prettiest, The Science of Beauty, this. Many intellectuals would have us believe that beauty is inconsequential, since it explains nothing, solves nothing, and teaches us nothing. It should not have a place in intellectual discourse. But, she goes on to write, there is something wrong with this picture. Outside the realm of ideas, beauty rules. Nobody has stopped looking at it, and no one has stopped enjoying the sight. Turning a cold eye to beauty is as easy as quelling physical desire or responding with indifference to a baby's cry. Etcott makes a good point. At its simplest, beauty, the most public part of the self, is complicated. On one hand, many of us grow up hearing that it's only inner beauty that counts, and while that is and should always be true, we also grow up with the dazzlingly glamorous multi-billion dollar beauty industry and its advertising messages that we internalize from even the earliest ages, showing us that we must look a certain way. To start, let's just look at the name of it. Look in any drugstore, and the aisle is probably no longer called the cosmetics aisle, but rather the beauty aisle. It's subtle, and maybe fussy and pedantic to point out, but it nonetheless is a message, as if we need cosmetics in order to have beauty, when I would venture that all of us know deep down that cosmetics can be a part of beauty, but that real beauty is much more. But look, I'm not aiming to trash makeup. I'll be the first to admit that makeup is, no pun intended, pretty fun. But the industry behind the products, the more than $62 billion market in the U.S. alone, is, like any industry, a business that needs us to need it in order to survive. And in the case of cosmetics, it's a very unique business in that it almost has no choice but to prey on some of our deepest fears and insecurities in order to work. And the culture that seeds those fears and insecurities shows its face just about everywhere, doesn't it? It goes beyond makeup, of course, to our clothing, to our bodies. And if you're still thinking this topic of conversation is perhaps light or shallow, consider this. A Princeton study concluded that attractive workers earn over $200,000 more in their lifetimes than those who are considered to be less so. Another study showed that being tall has its advantages, with every inch of height equal to a salary increase of about $789 per year. And per year, thin women earned an average of nearly $9,000 over their heavier colleagues, with the salary disparity dropping to a difference of about $5,000 per year between the salaries of men of different weights. So with that, we can agree that our cultural biases around beauty are not just a matter of self-esteem and belonging, but also about economics and privilege. From the dolls that we give our kids to standards of ideal height and weight and gender and race and youth to how we define looking the part of leadership roles that we aspire to get, whether at corporations or even, say, when running for office, it's dizzying and frankly disheartening how narrow our definition of beauty seems to really be. And yet the cosmetics industry forges ahead, culture nods, and the plot thickens more and more. So, while we could make this topic a 10-part series and still barely scratch the surface, tonight we'll take a look at this complicated subject of beauty and the science, the industry, and the complexities within it. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up tonight on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America,
this is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN. Indeed, it is the Saturday Night Special, and I'm Amy Guth, and tonight we are taking a look at the seemingly simple, but definitely complex and nuanced topic of beauty. Once you dig into it, it is certainly, certainly much more complex than it might seem. We are going to look at the cosmetics industry and its advertisers, advertisements, and the culture that feeds it and them, and that is fed by all of it. And we're going to look at the narrow definition that we have for who and what is and is not considered beautiful, and many of the other contradictions and complexities the topic brings up. We are going to be talking with two different campaign founders, a beauty editor, and a fine art photographer. They're all going to join us tonight to talk it over, each with a different stake in this whole conversation. So it'll be very interesting to get all of their perspectives on this topic. All night, I will be delighted to hear from you, of course, as we go along. So feel free to give us a call, 312-981-7200. Of course, you can text or call that number. But if you're feeling a little bit radio shy, that's okay. I understand that. You can also find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and contribute to the conversation in that way, too. We'll be right back here in just a bit to get the conversation underway on 720. WGN. Hey, it's the Saturday Night Special, and I'm Amy Guth. Thank you for being with us and sharing part of your Saturday evening with us. We're always very grateful to you for that. Tonight, we're talking all about beauty. That is a tricky one, right? As I said in the opening, my opening spiel there, that is a topic we could talk about in 10 episodes and still only be scratching the surface. But nonetheless, it is an interesting and nuanced and complex topic. And I think it's really important to talk about it because there's a lot of things attached to that, right? It's not just our self-image and self-esteem, but also there's an economic factor. There are so many different factors to that. Our guest right now, I'm very excited to talk with, joining us by phone is Robin Rice, who is the creator of a really fascinating campaign called Stop the Beauty Madness. Welcome to the program, Robin.
Thank you.
So Stop the Beauty Madness is a really, really fascinating site. If you're not familiar with this, go to stopthebeautymadness.com. This has been around for a couple of years, but it is still just as important as ever. It's such an important topic, and it's really taking a look at advertisements and the things that we just kind of look at because we're so bombarded with images of beauty and beauty standards and what is considered beautiful. But you're really subverting that with this campaign. But tell us a bit about how it came to be, this campaign.
Well, I try to do some kind of a social change project every year. And this particular year was one that I wanted to take on, the concept of beauty. I like to say nobody hired me to do it. Nobody stopped me from doing it. I just wanted to explore the concept of why this is so huge in our culture. And I also wanted to point out and find a way to illustrate that it's not you, it's us, it's all of us, it's in the water. It doesn't matter what angle it comes in at, doesn't matter if you're thin or if you're, you know, heavy or if you're, old, young, whatever. It's everywhere, and we're all affected by it. So I wanted to create an ad campaign, if you will, that about 25 ads that sort of came from every single angle I could think of and work with to sort of point to the same thing.
They're chilling. I mean, some of them, they're so very powerful. Some of them, as I was looking at them on the website, they gave me goosebumps. Some of them are really, really important, especially the one with young kids on the ads, because you know that those messages are internalized by even very, very young children that we see in ads. As you created this campaign, what were some maybe surprising or kind of just revelations that you had or that you heard from people that the campaign touched?
I think one of the most shocking things to me, I did a focus group for African American women because I really didn't feel like I could speak to that audience myself without doing something first and really understanding it. And I was absolutely shocked to understand that many African-American women will have their daughters not go out into the sun in order to not have darker skin as an advantage in life, to have lighter skin. And the idea of having children not going out and playing in the sun was just horrifying to me, that it was, you know, so strong that came in, you know, there. So that one was definitely one. Another was an email I got from a woman in Singapore, and she just poured her heart out to me about how she spends all of her discretionary money on products to lighten her skin as well. So this is worldwide, and the campaign was covered by magazines all over the world. It was pretty surprising because it was just, one person putting something together. So.
Well, it only takes one person to make a difference and reach people with important work. And this is certainly very, very important work. And so was there pushback against the campaign? Were there people that dismissed it as this is about just beauty, that's nothing? Or was there something even bigger of someone trying to kind of stop this or push back hard against what you were trying to reveal and uncover?
Yeah, no, there wasn't. I was amazed. I was really amazed that I expected pushback. I expected a lot of pushback. Two things I did have happen. One was almost everyone said, did you have to be so harsh? Mm. They were like, did you have to be this in your face? And, my answer was, yes, I did. I felt I did. I needed to call it out because there isn't anything that rings untrue to those who experience it. So I felt like I had to say it as it was. The other thing that was really fascinating was that women instantly got it. They instantly said, oh, my God, that's me on a page. Whereas the men who interviewed me, and some of them were, camera people, or they were producers or whatever, they were like, yeah, explain to me why this is really important. And they really, I realized they really did not, in general, understand something very fundamental about it that women instantly, fundamentally understood. The generalization, but it was a I would say almost every case that was the difference. There was a difference there.
Isn't that so interesting? We're talking with Robin Rice, who is the creator behind the Stop the Beauty Madness campaign. You can check that out at stopthebeautymadness.com. There's a lot of fascinating things on that website. I really love at the very top of your website, you have this wonderful kind of thing. I feel like I want to put this up on my mirror. It's so good. It says, enough of the impossible standards, enough of the ideal image. Most of all, enough of the feeling of not enough when it comes to your own beauty. There also comes a time when an entire culture of women have had it, when blogs and ad campaigns and as-is selfie pictures start to change the rules of the game. I think that's so powerful that enough. I think that's so important that we do that. And I think it's even more important if you are if you're a parent, if you are around young children, or even if you're not a parent, just the messages that we send to young children. I mean, I remember very clearly being in a grocery store a couple of years ago, and there was a very young girl in there shopping with her mother, and asked her to buy a particular kind of cookies, and she said, "No, they will make us fat, and you want boys to like you." And I about dropped dead in the middle of the grocery store, and she saw me looking at her in such a way, but I couldn't even begin. There was so much I wanted to say to her. I just wanted to like hug that little girl and, but it's not my business. It's her child. I'm not the kid's mom. There's only so much you can do. But, I think there's overt things like that, but even there's so many subtle things. I mean, tiny things, even the way I've noticed the way people speak to young male children versus young female children. They're like, they talk about, oh, you're so smart, so handsome, but rarely handsome to the boy. It's usually about being smart or something like that. And to the girl, it's always, oh, so pretty. Look at those pretty eyelashes. Look at that pretty hair. And I think we start so early talking about our physical appearances.
Absolutely. It's everywhere. I mean, it's the bar by which we, judge ourselves. I was on an airplane a couple of days ago, and I was watching a woman, kind of a row up and to my right, who was on her, on her camera and pictures of herself, and she was making the picture bigger and examining every one of her features in every single picture. And I just could almost feel the pain of her, self-examination to such a scrutiny. It was really, really hard to watch, but so common.
Isn't that interesting? A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking with someone about the role of technology and selfies and all that. And on one hand, I think we should feel empowered to take up bandwidth and you know, show our faces exactly as they are. But I think the downside of that is that I think there's a lot of pressure to cover the wrinkles and Photoshop them out and look just right and, you know, all of those things and make sure we're always happy. We can't have an emotion besides happiness. I think there's so much right. to it that even our emotions on some level are kind of policed in a way. So as you, after you created Stop the Beauty Madness and you received feedback and you met women from around the world who reached out to you, I mean, it still is just as applicable right now as it was a couple of years ago when you created it. What is your hope as this living body of work that it is? You know, what is your hope for the message attached to it, especially in this time that we're in right now? I think no matter how anyone listening voted, I think we can all agree there was a lot of conversation about women and looks and things like that in this past presidential cycle, election cycle rather. And do you feel that people have started relating to it anew in this time that we're in right now?
That's just such a huge conversation.
I know, we need another hour. I know.
Right. You know, I think is certainly on the table more. And the fact that there were women who it bothered and women who it did not bother, or didn't bother enough, I think is really interesting. I mean, I look at it and I'm still very curious about all of it. But I think if we dig underneath, which right now, you know, we kind of have a very surface culture, but if you dig underneath, we're going to have to deal with this if we ever want to get to some kind of real health in our culture. We just have to. This is one of the root causes of unhappiness, especially for women. But the whole game is one that we're going to just have to get underneath. And you know, people ask, well, has it changed me, you know, since it's come out? And I would say, I think it's inherent in us, if you're trained young enough, that your first thought when the camera goes off or when you're in front of a mirror is, you know, how do I look and am I okay and all of those kinds of things. But we have the power to have a second thought and to practice having a second thought right on its heels that says, that's too small a question for me. I'm not going there. That is just, that's not where I need to spend my time, energy, and power. And so I think that is more than anything now needed for us to have that second thought.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that. That's too small a thought for me. I think that is so empowering and such a wonderful, wonderful approach, because we're so conditioned, right? We're so conditioned to do that. I remember, and I've written about this before. I will tweet this out after the broadcast, but I wrote about a time where I was in a dressing room and I overheard a group of women that were all shopping together. And they were just berating themselves in the mirror as if it was a sport. And I think we're all so conditioned, but it was so overt that I, you know, I really, really noticed it. And I thought it would be odd to hear the opposite, right? You never hear of someone going, I'm going to buy this dress because I'm awesome in it, right? It's right away. It's like, well, if I suck in, maybe I could get away with it. You know, it's so ingrained in us that we, you know, the minute, as you said, a minute a camera is turned on us, do I look okay? As if we need, you know, as if looking a certain way is like the toll we have to pay, you know, the rent we have to pay just to exist, just to be photographed, to be remembered at an event or a thing, which I think is so, it's so heartbreaking when you really start breaking it down into those nuanced places like that, which is why I was so glad to see this site. And so, you talked about the community response a bit and some of the feedback. And so all in all, what are the big takeaways that you hope, if someone looking at the site tonight as we're sitting here talking, what are the big takeaways that you most hope that they get from your site, stopthebeautymadness.com?
I think the biggest thing is it's not you. You will believe it's you. You will believe it's your nose, it's your waistline, it's your thighs, it's your whatever. But it is not you, it's us. It's all of us. It's in the water. It's in everything. And if you can move away from the conversation really thinking it's about you to understanding this is culture, then you're going to have some relief right there. That's a huge takeaway, I would say. And the other thing is that if you really want to be empowered as a woman, you are going to have to risk saying, I got this. I'm fabulous. I'm not perfect, but I'm really, really awesome as a human being. I'm a really awesome human being. And I actually can say that. And I get backlash for that sometimes. I get people saying, well, you know, you can't say that. You know, you can't really, you know. And it's like, yeah, you can. You really can.
You get backlash for saying that you're awesome?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's really fascinating how uncomfortable we are with being happy with ourselves and how comfortable we are with being unhappy with ourselves. So for the parts of me that I celebrate them loudly on purpose and just to annoy people perhaps, but, but to change the conversation, to say, you know what, I'm super smart. And I'm really creative. And I made that campaign out of my own little head for no reason other than I wanted to. I took the same pieces of the puzzle that the advertising industry has, and I made it different. And yeah, I did that. Hey, fun.
I love it. I love it. You are my people, Robin Rice. Thank you so
Thank you so much.
I love this. I love this. So everybody head to stopthebeautymadness.com. Robin, you're on Twitter at @bewhoyouare, which I think is the perfect Twitter handle for you. I can think of no better Twitter handle for you. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight on the program. All right, we are going to head to news now. We're going to go upstairs and check in with David Jennings for news. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate you for sharing part of your Saturday evening with us, for sure. And tonight's topic is not an easy one. It never is on this show, is it, right? It's always, I always got to make it difficult. And indeed, I have continued to do so this week, because this week we're talking about beauty. And that seems very simple on the surface, but in fact, it is complicated, as we were just talking about with our last guest. It is really a tricky topic. There's a lot of nuances to it. There's a lot of social implications. There's a lot of inner angst. There's a lot of stuff attached to that big topic, right? So we are talking it out tonight. As I said at the top of the show, we could probably have 10 shows talking all about this topic and still only scratch the surface, but we're going to do our best to turn over as many stones on that topic as we can this evening. And so joining us now is Alexis Wolfer, who is the founder of The Beauty Bean, which is, you know what, there's a lot of beauty sites out there and a lot of stuff like that and a ton of magazines that, oh boy, sometimes I got to roll my eyes at them and their headlines. It just, you just look at the cover and you just, you know, feel like crap right away, because they immediately point out all the things that are wrong with you, right? Like, have a firmer rear end and do this and don't look so old and all these things that you're like, oh, I guess right? There's lots of stuff. But the Beauty Bean has done a totally different thing, and they have this really lovely motto that is all about no BS. Of course, I'm, you know, can't say the real motto on the air, but nonetheless, it's about boldness and a positive way of looking at beauty and cosmetics and self-care, which is really empowering and really, really lovely. Welcome to the program, Alexis.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, you say that you've been trying to just scratch the surface in the last hour. I've been having this conversation for 8 years, and I feel like I've barely scratched the surface.
Well, I'm sure I can definitely understand why. It is complicated, and I really love the work you're doing at the Beauty Bean. And as I was looking all through the site yesterday and today preparing for the show, I noticed so many little tiny details that are so important. One of them I have to commend you on is there was like a little snack recipe in there, and at the end of it, it was, you know, somewhere the word like guilt-free came up, but at the end you were like, you know what, but no food should have guilt. Eat what you like. Do I love little touches like that that just say like, you know, hey, that word is so pushed on us that some snacks are good and some are bad that we can let ourselves off the hook for a bit. And I think that's such an important thing, because the counter message to it is also so subtle that we have to hit back. And I commend you for doing such a good job with that, both with, you know, food and body stuff, but also with beauty.
Thank you. You know, language is so important, and yeah, you're right. It's really loaded, and the images and the words that we choose to use have a profound impact. It's why media is so powerful. It's why magazines and written word is so profound, particularly in how it affects how we feel about ourselves.
Truly.
And so it is really important to really pay attention to those little details. And, you know, that doesn't mean that we're perfect. You know, we do this work, but there are times when we go back and we're like, ooh, we cringe at, like, we didn't catch something, or, you know, we really do try to stay on top of all of it, but it just, it's hard. It's really hard.
Sure, sure. And so tell us the origin story of the Beauty Bean and how it came to be.
Sure. So I went to college thinking I was going to study economics. I have three older brothers and a dad who are all in finance. I thought that that's what it meant to be a successful human. And I stumbled into an intro to women's studies class, and it changed my life. And I remember calling home and telling my family that I was switching my major from economics to gender studies, and them being like, okay.
Whatever you want to do.
Like, whatever. Like, yes, we're so proud of you. But, like, so much hesitation and angst in that response. But, you know, all the right words, just all the wrong feels. And I did. And it completely changed the way that I thought about the entire world, how I thought about myself. I had struggled with an eating disorder in my past. And learning this new lens through which to see the whole world was really profound. I graduated. I worked in Tanzania at a nonprofit working in women's empowerment. I came back to New York to study human rights at Columbia University and really had every intention of working in public policy and in international development. And I had had a bunch of summer internships at Condé Nast and women's magazines. And, you know, the work I was doing at Columbia was so heavy and so deep. You know, it was like genocide and rape as a weapon of war and all of these, like, really heavy topics. And I called a friend who was working at Lucky Magazine. And I was like, hey, you know, I could really use, like, a little bit of, like, part-time work and, you know, something light and fluffy. And, like, I'm happy doing whatever. Like, put me wherever. And I got a job working part-time in accessories, like handbags and shoes at Lucky Magazine. And it was there that I really saw this overlap of the power that media has on women, the way that we interact with magazines. And at the time, like, this was, like, right at the crux of online content really becoming a big thing. This is, like, 2008. And I really just saw the way that they were talking to women and about women. And I was very fortunate to have a graduate school professor who really pushed me to look at that industry, and an industry that, you know, I always loved beauty and fashion. It was something that was fun and glamorous and, you know, cool, but it was never the work I was going to do. It felt so light and fluffy and unimportant. And I wanted to do, like, real women's studies work. And I ended up realizing that the ultimate human right is the right to love yourself. And if women don't love and respect their own bodies, if we aren't treating our own bodies with love and respect, it becomes infinitely more difficult to ask others to do the same. And so I ultimately wrote my graduate school thesis on women's magazines and their influence on body image and eating disorders, and ultimately the corporate social responsibility of media in how they speak to women. And it became a business model to start the Beauty Bean. And, you know, I did. And if you had told me then that 8 years later I'd still be doing it, I would have told you that you were crazy. Mm-hmm. But here I am and still doing this work and still really passionate about this work.
That's really fascinating. I would love to read this thesis at some point. But in your opinion, what is...
I'm happy to share it.
Great. What is the responsibility that you believe that major media outlets, particularly women's magazines, have to their female readers?
In the same way that I think that all industries have a responsibility to the global cohesiveness of humanity to do good while doing well, I think women's media falls under that same purview. Mm. I will also push back and say the Beauty Bean has proven that you don't need to make women feel badly about themselves in order to sell them things. Women are going to buy things because they want to. And women can buy things from a place of empowerment and want, as opposed to a place of insecurity and need. And that doesn't change your bottom line. So if you're worried, you know, the pushback that I got from magazines when I first started was like, oh, well, like the advertisers, you're going to piss off the advertisers. And I was like, you know what, let me see. Like, I don't think so, but, like, let me see. Mm-hmm. And within the first couple of months of launching the site, I had sold my first ad to Olay. And I was like, see, like, They get it. They get it. They don't care what the eyeballs are coming for. They just care that there are eyeballs there.
Yeah, and that's a major brand nonetheless.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And so tell us about a campaign that you've started called Makeup Free Mondays.
So Makeup Free Mondays is something that started relatively early on in the Beauty Beans history. It really came organically. So it's rare, I think, these days that movements kind of start from action as opposed to plan. But Mondays were always the busiest day. You know, we were a startup. We were sending out emails on the weekends. Nobody was getting back to us. And Mondays were crazy. And it became this joke via Twitter with people on my team that it was just kind of like hashtag makeup free Mondays because we were too busy to put on makeup. And I had one of those light bulb aha moments where I was like, like maybe there's something here. And I've never been someone to wear a whole lot of makeup, but I most definitely was somebody who wore makeup on a day-to-day basis, even if it was just like a little bit of blush or a little bit of mascara. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to try this out. And I'm going to commit to not wearing any makeup on Mondays and see how this goes. And for 4 Mondays, I did it. And it was a really interesting experiment, especially being someone who doesn't typically wear a whole lot of makeup. And I found myself in conversation apologizing. I remember vividly on one of the Mondays walking into a meeting with mostly men, only half of whom I'd ever met before. And the first words out of my mouth were, "Hi, I'm Alexis Wolfer. I'm so sorry I'm not wearing any makeup. You know, I'm trying this thing. It's called Makeup Free Mondays." And having this internal dialogue of, you know, like, why am I apologizing for this? Like, I'm not naked.
Right.
Like, this is so ridiculous. Like, I'm dressed. I am, quote unquote, put together, whatever that means. And we can deconstruct that in a different conversation. But, you know, I found myself having these inner dialogues where I was like, why am I apologizing? And like, what does this mean? And, you know, I ended up launching Makeup Free Mondays officially with a blog post on the Beauty Bean with a selfie taken in my bathroom in my apartment in New York. And it went viral. AOL picked it up. It was on the homepage of AOL. And it was one of those really interesting moments where, you know, I had spent so much of my career trying to be the quote-unquote beauty expert and look a certain way and your headshots being a certain way. And, you know, I've always been against airbrushing and all of that jazz, but it was still this, like, highly constructed image of what my online presence was. And then all of a sudden there was this selfie taken in a bathroom with terrible lighting and my iPhone, and, oh, it was everywhere. It was AOL's most popular story of their month. It got over 1 million impressions and hundreds of thousands of comments, and it spun from there. And over the last 7 years or so, you know, countless celebrities have joined in on Makeup Free Mondays. The Today Show went Makeup Free one Monday, and it's been a really interesting campaign that has really taken on a life of its own. You know, I own the IP behind it, but I have never enforced it. I'm always really happy when other people appropriate it and take it on and do what they will with it. And, you know, it's not about ego or credit. It's about, you know, can we really put the focus back on the things that make us beautiful? And it's not a swipe of lipstick. It's not mascara. It's not your hair being perfectly coiffed. And when we really spend the time getting more comfortable with what we look like in real life without all of the accoutrements, it allows us to appreciate makeup for what it is. And it's something, it's fun, it's glamorous. And, you know, as women, we are privileged to be able to play with paint on our faces, but it doesn't define us. And so can you get to a place where you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you appreciate your beauty for what it is? And makeup is just something that you do for fun. It's not something that defines you. It's not something that makes you pretty.
Do you feel like there has been maybe renewed interest in it? We have Alicia Keys has decided she's not wearing makeup anymore, and she's been on The Voice and out on the red carpet without makeup and really owning that and really, you know, really rocking that. And it seems like suddenly a lot of talk about going makeup free is just happening right now. I think it seems to be also bubbling up again or a little louder because so much conversation around women and supporting one another and all that has been happening since the election. And I think leading up to the election too, the presidential election. So have you noticed that kind of renewed interest? And if so, is it of a maybe a different flavor than when it initially started this campaign?
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for this, like, third wave of feminism, if you will, being quite subtle but nevertheless profound. And I think that Alicia Keys is a really incredible example of somebody who has taken on this mission and really stood with it and owned it, as opposed to, you know, in the past, there have been quite a few celebrities that have, quote unquote, gone makeup free, but it's still like their hair was professionally done and the lighting is perfect and the photographer is top notch and, you know, all of that. It's been like this very contrived version of makeup free. I do think that there's something to be said for the presidential election and Hillary Clinton's rise as the first formidable female candidate of a major party that really allowed us to see the comparisons, particularly in the primary, between Bernie Sanders, who always constantly like looked like he just rolled out of bed and nobody cared, and Hillary, who like you knew she was in hair and makeup for an hour before she walked out of a hotel room. And I think that women in particular really saw that contrast and felt it. And I think we've all felt that, of knowing that like the men in our lives, you know, quickly shower and they're out the door in 1 second, and that we've got this process. And are you having less of an impact on the world because you are spending 1/12th of your waking hours coiffing? And I think that that's something that people saw in the Hillary Clinton campaign. I think it's something that people are feeling in their personal lives, and I think it's something that celebrities are jumping on the bandwagon for.
Well, I've long thought that the beauty shift is a really interesting topic, because I think from the outside, it's easy to say, well, if you feel like it's you don't have the time, you know, you need to reclaim that time in your life, don't do it. But I think people say that without realizing that there is, in fact, a bit of a sometimes a social penalty to not participating in that. Right. Because the definition of beauty that and particularly in a professional setting, the definition for what is polished and leadership worthy and professional for a woman is quite clear. And so there is kind of a little bit of a not an overt penalty, but sometimes just a bias that you will encounter by rejecting the beauty.
Yeah,
shift.
And there are two like really interesting parallel things that are going on. So, and you touched on both of them just now, but the first is like what is pretty. And we can look at some of the people who have really jumped on the Makeup Free Monday or Makeup Free Period movement are people who are, by all objective measures, beautiful. And so Alicia Keys going makeup free, you know, is wonderful. But like, we are talking about somebody who is considered by Western standards to be profoundly beautiful. And so is that standard different? Is this idea of pretty makeup free different based on whether or not you fit into this ideal of Western beauty? And does that like leveling down, if you will, have less of an impact on someone like Alicia Keys, as opposed to, you know, the average woman? And the second thing is like whether or not being wearing makeup is a reflection of your level of seriousness or your level of professional integrity or how much of a leader you are or are capable of being. And that is separate and equally really interesting to me. You know, I feel really fortunate. I went to a very liberal high school in New York, and, you know, I remember it being this thing where, like, girls would get ready and you would, like, spend time doing your hair, but you didn't want anybody to know that you had done your hair because it was really cool to be smart. And if you were the girl who had, like, woken up early because you were blowing out your hair for an hour, like, that was not cool. And I wish that more girls had that experience. I wish it had more of an impact on me than it ultimately did, although in retrospect, now I think it has. But there's something about that mentality, and I think it also falls into this trend of, like, athleisure wear and people dressing more casually. It's like more things fly these days. I think startup culture has impacted it. So this idea of, like, Mark Zuckerberg in a hoodie being one of the most successful people on the planet, it's like, oh, like, you don't need to wear a suit and tie to be serious or to be successful. And that's trickling down, I think, to women as well, but just not quite as obviously.
Yeah.
But it's getting there.
Yeah. Athleisure, that's an interesting topic too, right? Because we've just seen that debated, you know, in the headlines just very recently with this kind of op-ed that was just women should not be wearing yoga pants, and then all the responses that came to it of like, you know what, I'll wear what I want.
Over people telling me what I should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
I think that if you are a good person, if you are addressing and tackling and meeting the benchmarks of all measures of success in your life, whether those are imposed by a boss or whatnot, like, who cares? I don't care if you show up to work in sweatpants. Like, if you're doing the job and that's what makes you comfortable, great. Like, why are we judging people based on what they're wearing? It's just, whether it's your clothes or your makeup or whether your hair's done or not, like, who cares? It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a complicated one, and it's really fascinating to wade through the comment sections on both that anti-yoga pants piece as well as some of the response pieces. I mean, the comment sections are fascinating. I mean, comment sections are strange places anyway,
sections are such dangerous rabbit holes.
They really are. It's really, really true. It's definitely true. And so what is on the horizon for the Beauty Bean, and you know, what is it you most hope as people are getting familiar with the site and reading it and taking it all in? What is your, you know, the thing that you hope the most as a takeaway there?
So the Beauty Bean we've been around for almost 8 years. And when we first started, you know, the Beauty Bean was very subtle in its mission to make women feel better about themselves. We looked like any other women's magazine. We just happened to not be airbrushing our models. We were using regular girls. We were, you know, really focused on this diversity of body shape, size, and color. Our language choice was very specific. We weren't covering weight loss, and we were talking about fitness as, you know, a way to be healthy, not as a way to lose weight, for example. So, like, the core was the same, but, like, there were a whole lot of people who came to the Beauty Bean and enjoyed it as any other lifestyle website without having any idea that we were on this other mission. Over the last 8 years, we have reiterated twice. Both of those times, we have become bolder in where we stand. We have pushed the boundary more. We have been more vocal with where we stand on issues and our feminist take on beauty and pop culture and all of those things. We've also focused much more on beauty over the years. So whereas we used to cover fashion also, now we still cover fitness and nutrition, but it's always kind of in this, like, a tie into beauty as an umbrella term. And we are in the process of reiterating again. So we are hoping to launch a new version of the site in the next 3 months, and that will, you know, continue to kind of push us a little bit more towards the bolder side of things.
Which goes with your motto, of course, that's on the site that we can't totally say on the radio, but it is a good one. It's sort of one we should all adopt and use have on our mirrors.
And that motto only emerged in the last iteration, which was about 3 years ago. So we've been constantly kind of pushing it a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And part of that is because I want to push it more. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is that, you know, other sites are playing catch up and other magazines are playing catch up. And this isn't a competitive thing, but this is like if Teen Vogue is no longer talking about, like, bikini bodies, like, we got to step up our A game because, like, great. Like, I'm so excited that they're doing that. And, like, Women's Health banishing some of the, like, lose 10 pounds in 10 days kind of stuff, and Self Magazine, all of these women's magazines have really, you know, I think that the Beauty Bean has pushed the needle in such a way that other magazines are feeling compelled to have to kind of catch up a little bit. And so I feel compelled to keep on pushing that needle further and further so that everyone else continues to catch on. So I get the comment all the time of, like, oh, well, aren't you frustrated that X, Y, and Z did A, B, and C, which I've been doing for a while? And it's like, no, like, the whole goal of this isn't for the Beauty Bean to be some, like, massive media company. Like, great if it is, but, you know, the goal here is to change the way that media, plural, is speaking to women and to profoundly impact the way that young girls are raised in this culture so that they grow up feeling good about themselves. And that's not as a counterculture, but it is the culture that they are living in.
Truly, truly. Well, everybody, head to thebeautybean.com. Founder, boss lady, all things, editor, all that. You probably wear 50 different hats there, but nonetheless, keep wearing them. Alexis Wolfer, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Again, that is thebeautybean.com, and you can connect with them on social media and all that stuff. And as she said, they're going to have a new website in just a couple months, so check that out for sure. We are going to take a break and get you to news and all that good stuff here in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN, welcome back to the program. Tonight we're talking all about a topic that seems very, very light and simple on the surface, but in fact is really complicated, and that is the topic of beauty. We have been talking about the cosmetics industry, the advertising and the messages in that advertising that we are bombarded with, and what that does to us, the effect that that has on us even as really young children, and the beauty standards and how that definition of what is beautiful is really rather narrow. So as we've been talking about this topic, we've had guests with us to each talk about different aspects of this. And I want to shift to a rather modern piece of it right now. And that is the role of technology and social media, because that is something not to be overlooked at all as we are talking about this topic. Joining us now by phone is Veronica Ariola, who is the creator of the blog Viva La Feminista. She's the director of UIC's new office that supports Latina students in STEM fields, and she is founder of the 365 Feminist Selfie Project, which is where I would like to start. Welcome to the program, Veronica.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me back.
So, you know, as you created the 365 Feminist Selfie Project, right away, I remember when you did it, and I remember seeing online a lot of people were, you know, people still kind of scoff at selfies a little bit as if they're just an exercise in vanity and self-admiration and something to be admonished. But you took a very different and very deliberate and thoughtful approach to encouraging mostly women, but all people, to take selfies. So tell us about that, if you would.
So definitely people were looking at selfies, and they still admonish them about being vain or as if somebody is asking for people to like them because they're beautiful. I was thinking about selfies in terms of what it means for someone to actually take a picture of themselves and share it, and actually, for a lot of people, it's an act of courage and bravery, because maybe they haven't been told they are beautiful enough to be in a picture or have a picture taken. So that's really where I started.
And it's such a fascinating, it's really a community now. If you look at Twitter, but especially Instagram, at that hashtag 365 feminist selfie, it's really, really fascinating, because there are players in it, right? There's people that contribute every single day that you kind of you get to know them, because it's really all about just putting up a photograph of yourself as you are right there in that moment. It's not about dolling up, unless you are dolled up in that moment. That's okay too, but it's really just about, it's about kind of a reality check of this is really me. This is what I'm really doing right now. And they're often accompanied by some really thoughtful and vulnerable statements too. A lot of people have shared really personal things in this community. So how have you seen this community grow since you first created it?
I think that the fact that people have been so vulnerable and as honest as one can get on social media has really added to that community, and has allowed other people to be more vulnerable and tell their stories. So having pictures of tired moms being frustrated at the end of a long day, having women who have deployed husbands taking a picture because they're lonely. They miss their husband who's away and he's not going to be home for a couple more months. Or even pictures of people in their cars just before they're going to go in for that big job interview, and they're all dolled up but they're nervous, and they're just asking for everyone to wish them well, and everyone does.
It's really a fascinating community. And on the point of moms that you mentioned, what I have been observing is that it certainly seems like the selfie, for still as much grief as it gets and as much people dismiss it, I think the selfie is very important to women for a couple of reasons, but especially important to moms because it is changing family photos. For so long, the mom was the one taking the photograph. And so many, I know in my family, I have tons of photos of me and my brother and my dad because my mom was always taking the picture. And now we're seeing, because of selfies, we're seeing moms participating in family photos or just, here's a cute moment. And there's no, like, if you got up and got the camera, you would spoil it, but you can just whip out your phone and take this moment where your child is snuggled up with you or, you know, when you bring your baby home or whatever that moment is, that are really touching and beautiful. And some very lovely photos that I've seen have been selfies of moms kind of just documenting moments that are really lovely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I was thinking about the project, I had been out to lunch and was actually watching a mom and a little girl, her daughter, taking a bunch of selfies at the restaurant we were at. And they were just having so much fun. And I also was... It then made me reflect on the fact that I also have a lot of photos of my sisters and I and my dad and I, and my mom was often the photographer. And I don't think it was the fact that we didn't ask her to be in the photos, but I think that she took the opportunity to be the photographer so she wouldn't be in the photos. And I've heard that story from a lot of other people. And so taking a family selfie, even now when I take a selfie with some friends, they're like, oh, no, I'll take the picture. I'm like, no, you're getting in this. I can do this. I'm an expert now. I can get us all in this one selfie, so let's all be in it.
And it was really interesting to see the role of the selfie in this past election, because I saw a lot of moms who... and dads too, but mostly moms with their daughters going to polling places saying, no matter how this day goes, you know, history is being made today. There's a woman on the ballot and I'm taking my daughter and we're taking a selfie at the polling place. And I just remember on election day, so many very patriotic and very loving and sweet moments were captured because of selfies.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There were a lot of selfies on election day and throughout the campaign, people with their various different buttons and T-shirts and signs and at rallies. There was a photo that was taken that from the press pool at a Hillary Clinton rally where Hillary was at the podium and you could see the whole crowd had turned to take a selfie and the media ran with it as like, I can't believe these people are there to listen to Hillary Clinton and they decided all to turn her back and what kind of society are we in? But they had missed the fact that the Clinton campaign had used selfies as part of their promotion and actively asked people at different parts of events to, all right, now everyone, let's take a selfie.
Right.
So it wasn't so much that everyone decided to watch a rally through their phone. It was just that it was encouraged because they knew what that meant about getting the word out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I'm still fascinated by with selfies is that for as we, you know, as we've said, they still get their share of grief. But I think it is, as you said, an act of courage for some people who feel like they don't maybe want to be seen or don't feel like they deserved it. You know, I think we should all feel empowered to share who we are and take up space that we so richly deserve. And I think that really matters. And it's always interesting to me, what is it that shapes our perception of beauty? And there was a study that I read that Dove commissioned, and they have been at the center of many conversations about beauty and body image on both sides of it, really. But they did a survey, a pretty small group of women, about 1,000, a little over 1,000 women, talking about where women got their inspiration for beauty, and where is it just a few years ago would have been, you know, celebrities or, you know, models and movies and things like that. It's shifted to be about, it's more like peers, because you're seeing some representation. You're seeing the women that I see on Instagram taking selfies look like me, and they're doing the things I do, and they're having the struggles I have. And that's powerful and that's important. But I also think there's potentially a little bit of a downside of that, because we never know what we don't know, right? We never know the full story of any selfie, even if we're being very vulnerable, especially with there's a lot of apps that allow people to really change their faces and their bodies. And And I think there's perhaps a bit of pressure on people to sometimes look a certain way or are fearful of sharing their full selves. I mean, I think there's a difference between maybe photoshopping out a pimple and, you know, changing the size of your waist or your, you know, boobs or whatever, you know what I mean? What are your thoughts on those kind of apps and where do you fall on them?
You're totally correct that some of these apps and some of the filters even on like on Snapchat really do lighten your skin or give you that, you know, a fake tan or, you know, make your face look less full, really adds to that hurdle of a that beauty standard that we are all talking about and I think a lot of us push against. But sometimes the filters are just for fun as well. But I think we just need to be cognizant of what we're doing when we're using those filters. What are we doing? What does that mean? And to look at things critically, to look at all things, all media critically, whether they're our friends' selfies or the cover of Cosmo.
Mm-hmm. Very important. Very important. I think, too, what I really admire about the community that you've created with the 365 Feminist Selfie hashtag is the wide definition of beauty. It's not a group of women that all look alike at all. There are so many different ages of women and so many different races of women and so many body sizes and types. And I think that's so fascinating because if you just go to Instagram and look at, just pull up that hashtag 365 Feminist Selfie, you will immediately just see a sea of human beings having a very human experience and celebrating either the moment they're in or who they are or both or all of these things in such a powerful way. And I think you have been able to do that in such a unique way with that community that so many campaigns and beauty organizations, formal ones even, have tried and not succeeded. What do you attribute that to?
I think it's because it's a grassroots thing. It was just an idea that came from an ordinary person who's not trying to sell anything. Sure, you can buy a coffee mug with our logo on it, but, you know, I'm not trying to sell beauty cream. I'm not trying to sell anti-cellulite cream or perfect panties that'll make you fit into that skirt and look perfect. And we have these conversations, and as you say, that people of all different types, and types meaning various things, age, race, location, and people who are not classically beautiful, but still saying, you know what, this is what I look like, and I want to show it. And I'm a 40-year-old goth witch, and I'm good at selfies.
right. I mean, some of them are. I kind of love the sort of confessional ones. You know, the ones you mentioned, like moms frustrated at the end of a long day, where sometimes it's like not all smiley. It's just like a very serious look, like, oh my God, my child will not go to bed. I'm gonna flip out in a minute. You know, sometimes those are so powerful because immediately so many other people jump in and go, I'm with you. I feel you. I hear you. I've been there. It gets better. You know, it's a lovely you know, support moment too. Well, so through your work in 365 Feminist Selfie, and then also the blog that you've written for a number of years, Viva La Feminista, you're so entrenched in these topics that we're talking about tonight. Where is it that in your opinion, we still need a lot more dialogue when we're thinking about beauty, and especially as it applies to technology, maybe in selfies or self-image even? Where do you see just not enough attention being paid?
I think that it's the fact that as far as we have pushed back, we as in terms of like women and feminists pushing back on the beauty standard to widen it, to challenge it, to dismiss it, and to give the middle finger to it, we also at the same time have seen marketing and advertisers say, okay, well then we're just going to sell our beauty creams and scented soaps to men. We are going to Photoshop the heck out of their abs on magazines. We are going to make sure that the toys that boys play with, the
G.I. Joes, they have six packs now. So little boys can also have body dysmorphia. So there, take that. So that takes me back to, you know, one of the things I like to say is that feminism is for everybody. Let's break the beauty mold, beauty standard mold for everybody and free everybody up. Nobody needs a six pack unless, you know, you're an Olympic athlete and you get that because you're running 5 miles a day and working out so that you can win that one event every 4 years.
Yeah, unless you want that. And that's the thing, and it's about strength and not just for look, right? I had no idea that G.I. Joe had a six pack now. Who knew? And so where do you think, how in your opinion, can people most help each other? Particularly, how can we help young people who are so bombarded with all of these messages about standards of beauty so early on? I mean, you know, they're the little place that's in the store of makeup and I think it says ages like 3 and up or something. That's so early. And I would even guess that before then, there are messages received by children, particularly young girls, about a standard that, you know, there's an expectation you need to grow up and look like a Disney princess or a Barbie or something like that. How, in your opinion, can you help outrun that a little bit and help make the space a little bit broader for more people to fit into a definition of beauty and to feel okay with just feeling with just being who they are?
It goes back to media literacy and media education and talking to your kids at a really young age that what they see on magazines, in TV, and on movies is altered. So it's that, and even what we hear in music is altered. So most people we hear on the radio, they don't really sound like that. They go through filters, just like we put filters on our photos on Snapchat. People make a lot of money taking, quote, flaws out of other people's bodies and their voices. So to talk about that so that when you're looking at your pop star or your tween TV show idol on the cover of a magazine, you know that that is something that was created. That's not what that person actually looks like if you ran into them at the corner store. To help them see that so that they're not aspiring to those doctored images, those pieces of art, actually, as much time as puts into them. They are pieces of art. Mm-hmm. They're not reality. And so just to continue to do that, to embrace your own flaws, embrace your own beauty, so that your kids don't grow up hearing you talking about your diet. And if only you had 5 more pounds, we can go to take that vacation to Jamaica.
Yeah, I think the self-talk is so important. I mean, I think kids parrot back so much of what they hear the adults in their lives saying, not just their parents, but the things they're saying. And if you're, you know, body critical or critical of your face or something like that, little kids know that. And I've watched that happen. You know, I've watched little kids of just people that I know. I remember a friend of mine just said, oh my gosh, I haven't slept in 3 days. And look at the bags under these eyes. And then her daughter went and did the same thing. She was, yes, look at the bags under my eyes. And I'm like, oh my God, look at what we're, look. Mm-hmm. You know, they just mimic everything. They hear it all. And even if it's, they're just being cute, they are still internalizing that message. And it's so important. And it's, no one's perfect. No human being is, no parent is certainly, but I think it is important for us all to do our part. And I think there's the counter part of this is there's people that like roll their eyes at this and say, well, this is all, you know, politically correct garbage and it's important to look your best and all of that. But the fact is, I think we're just in a moment where it's finally, there's space to have conversations about widening the definition of beauty and about rejecting this, you know, these standards that have been put on women for a very long time to look and behave a certain way. And for men too, you know, I think we're just in a more open time, as I was saying with my last guest, where we can have these conversations. So to me, it's not about suddenly everybody has really been out of shape about a lot of things. To me, it's just we're in a moment where we finally, everybody's able to just kind of take a breath and talk about the things that are really weighing on them and really important to them.
Right, exactly. And that gives space to people doing things in different ways. So some days you can doll yourself up with a lot of makeup and some days you don't. And it's okay.
Yeah. And I think that's the part where sometimes this part of the conversation gets a little wonky because people are like, well, are you anti-makeup? No, I think makeup is fun. It's just that it's not, it shouldn't be required, and there shouldn't be an expectation to look a certain way to feel good. It should be whatever makes you feel good.
Yeah, totally.
Well, it's a tricky one. And again, as I said at the top of the show, we could have 10 shows entirely devoted to this topic and just still barely scratch the surface. But I think the role that social media plays is really, really an important one, because even just selfies aside, I think it's kind of fashionable right now where when people post something on social media, if it's a cold day here in Chicago and someone posts a picture of a vacation, the default is, I hate you, not
yeah.
That's awesome. Good for you. You know,
we're
kind of using this snark as a default language that is, you know, that's tricky and troubling. And I think it leads us down some subtle but not great paths sometimes with the way we talk to each other and the way we are willing to be ourselves online, really.
Definitely.
All right. Well, thank you. I know, again, there's so much to this that we could sit here and pontificate about
it. We could talk forever.
All day. But everybody head to Viva La Feminista. It's the blog that she writes. Thank you to my guest, Veronica Arriola. Always a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure
anytime
to have you on the show. And if you have not, go to Instagram and check out this wonderful community. It is the hashtag 365 Feminist Selfie. It is really, really fascinating. And you will go there and see an array of ages and races and body types and people just celebrating themselves and the moments they're in. And I am a very big fan. So thank you for creating that, Veronica.
Thanks for participating.
All right. We're going to take a break and then we're going to get you to news and all that good stuff. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. I love that opening of that song. It's a good one. So we have been talking about beauty tonight, and it is a complicated topic. I think if you've been with us from the top of the show, you will agree there's so many tricky little nuances to it, right? There's a lot to it. We talked first with Robin Rice, who was the creator of the Stop the Beauty Madness campaign, which I will tweet out all of this and we will make sure to put it on the website with the podcast at WGNradio.com. But Robin created the Stop the Beauty Madness campaign, which you can find same link there, stopthebeautymadness.com, that's really kind of calling out the advertising community of saying, you know, these ads are photoshopped and they're making us think something's wrong with us when it's really you, not us, which I think is a great message because we do, right? We look at a bikini ad and we're like, oh my God, I don't look like her. Well, she doesn't look like her, right? We have to remember that. We really, really do have to remember things like that. And then we talked with Alexis Wolfer, who is the founder of The Beauty Bean, which is a completely different take on the idea of a women's magazine. Because I think we've all looked at some of them and really gotten so discouraged. I don't buy them personally because I think that, oh boy, you know, two pages in and things have been pointed out to you that you didn't even know could be wrong with you. You know, I saw one that literally, I'm not kidding you, literally said something about like specific exercises to make your feet look thinner. And I'm like, what are my, right? Then you're like, well, how are my feet? I mean, it's complicated. It's like pointing out stuff that we don't even realize is wrong with us. So she created the Beauty Bean as an antidote to all of that. And it is very positive. And the stuff that's about fitness is about strength and feeling good and being healthy. And I said right off the bat when talking to her, I said I had to compliment her on anytime there's anything on there about food and the word guilt-free comes up. That's such a ubiquitous word in lots of the things we read and consume, right? That and it's subtly sending the message that unless it's extremely healthy, that we should feel very guilty for eating it. And yes, we should take care of ourselves and eat healthy food. But you know what? If you want to eat a piece of cake, eat a piece of cake, right? Just do it. We only live once. And so she puts that disclaimer on her on her food post that I think is really, really great. And it's there's a very body positive kind of thing there. And then we talked to Veronica Ariola, who's the creator of the blog Viva La Feminista and created the 365 Feminist Selfie Project, which is interesting because I think people have very strong feelings about selfies. But I'm very pro-selfie because I think it's important for us to feel like we can take a picture of ourselves, because the alternative is to say, I don't deserve to take up space, or I don't deserve to be seen, or I shouldn't be seen, or I'm ugly, or whatever. You know, I'm very pro selfie for that reason. Rachel, where do you fall on selfies?
I occasionally take selfies.
Yes. I follow on you on Instagram. I've seen a couple.
Yeah. But I like to regulate it. And I also don't like to do the thing where people put like Snapchat filters on their faces first and then do the selfie. Because I'm like, I kind of just want to see your face.
Yeah.
I think the last guest was talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ones that they actually like make your nose look smaller.
Yeah, there's that one that specifically like makes your complexion lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes your
and
face
smooth.
Yep, smooth. Like faces have pores on them. I don't know what to tell you. They do. They're real. They have, you know, skin and all of those things. I think it's interesting. I mean, Snapchat filters are its own kind of special issue because, you know, some of them are not in great taste. Like there's been a couple that are downright racially insensitive. I think I'll just say racist. There've been a couple that I don't think are cool at all. There've been a couple like the one we were just talking about that is about a standard of beauty, but there's some that are just fun and silly. Like if you want to put a jester hat on, that's your business. Like I did the one that puts like flowers on your hair and I just said something like that's more like it or something, you know, some of them are ridiculous and okay. But it's the things we don't say that's kind of difficult. Like I said, when we were talking to Veronica, I don't think there's anything in the world wrong with if you have a pimple or something and photoshopping that out of a photo, that's temporary. That's not a big deal.
That's what my stepdad, who's a wedding photographer, told me. It's okay to take out things that are temporary, like pimples, like weird, if someone has like makeup on their face, but mm-hmm. it can be insulting
right.
to the client to say, oh, there's kind of a wrinkle there. I'm just going to smooth that out.
Yep. I know someone who is a wedding photographer and got, she had a client who specifically said before the wedding, she said, I don't know what your policy is on photoshopping people, but I want you to know that I don't want you to Photoshop me. I don't want you to make my waist look smaller. I don't want you to make if my, you know, arm, that little spot between that doesn't know if it's a boob or an armpit, if that looks weird and rumpled up, let it be. I just want to be so unapologetically myself on my wedding day. And I thought that was so lovely that and my friend who is the wedding photographer has carried that forth and had that kind of conversation with her clients. And when people ask her to Photoshop them, she's like, look, I'm willing to, but I want you to consider just being unapologetically yourself and your entire self and exactly as you are, except for, you know, if you have like a giant zit on your nose. I can dig that, right? I can dig that. So have you ever, Rachel, have you ever played with those apps that like Facetune and all of those things?
I wish I could say no. But I have.
I have because I was curious about them. I thought, well, what could they possibly do? I didn't really understand what they did. And then I started playing with them. They're bizarre. I didn't look like me.
It makes you look fake.
Yes.
And I did it to a picture of myself and put it online. And my boyfriend was like, why did you do that to your face? Like, you looked so pretty. And now the picture looks like plastic. And I was like, oh. I mean, I liked it better, though, when I looked plastic.
Did you?
At the time.
What did you change about your face in the app?
I think I just made my complexion, like, smoother. Like, you know, you can do, like, the, I don't know, like, skin. And yeah. I think I added, the crazy thing is you can, like, add a bunch of stuff, which is a little bit
too
much. What do
you mean add? Like, an extra nose? What do you mean?
You can add, like, makeup.
Oh, my gosh.
Or different hair, which obviously I didn't do. But it's kind of fun to sit and go through. But have you heard of, there's a guy named James Friedman who is on Twitter. And he takes people's Photoshop requests and then does them literally because they're ridiculous. So a girl will be like, hey, can you make my legs longer? And then he'll Photoshop her really well, but make her legs like 12 feet high. It's very funny.
No, I have not heard of that person, but that's creative and funny.
His handle on Twitter is Jamie013.
F as in Frank. Jamie013. Well, here in a bit, we're going to be talking with another guest. We're going to be talking with Sarah Malotti. The complication is that she is talking with us. She's calling us from Italy, where it is about 3:40 in the morning. So we're giving her a little bit of leeway, but hopefully we can hear from her here really, really soon. But she did a really neat project that I want to share with you. It is called Quest for Beauty Project, and she traveled the world. She got this idea that perhaps that we, especially the Western world, has kind of forgotten what beauty really is. And so she's traveling the world and photographing women and asking five really powerful questions. And I think the work is so lovely. You can see it at questforbeauty.co, not com, but co. And it's really fascinating. It's a very lovely site with really beautiful photography. So hopefully we will hear from her from Italy here in just a bit. So let's take a break and we'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. I love that opening of that song. It's a good one. So we have been talking about beauty tonight, and it is a complicated topic. I think if you've been with us from the top of the show, you will agree there's so many tricky little nuances to it, right? There's a lot to it. We talked first with Robin Rice, who was the creator of the Stop the Beauty Madness campaign, which I will tweet out all of this and we will make sure to put it on the website with the podcast at WGNradio.com. But Robin created the Stop the Beauty Madness campaign, which you can find same link there, stopthebeautymadness.com, that's really kind of calling out the advertising community of saying, you know, these ads are photoshopped and they're making us think something's wrong with us when it's really you, not us, which I think is a great message because we do, right? We look at a bikini ad and we're like, oh my God, I don't look like her. Well, she doesn't look like her, right? We have to remember that. We really, really do have to remember things like that. And then we talked with Alexis Wolfer, who is the founder of The Beauty Bean, which is a completely different take on the idea of a women's magazine. Because I think we've all looked at some of them and really gotten so discouraged. I don't buy them personally because I think that, oh boy, you know, two pages in and things have been pointed out to you that you didn't even know could be wrong with you. You know, I saw one that literally, I'm not kidding you, literally said something about like specific exercises to make your feet look thinner. And I'm like, what? What are my, right? Then you're like, well, how are my feet? I mean, it's complicated. It's like pointing out stuff that we don't even realize is wrong with us. So she created the Beauty Bean as an antidote to all of that. And it is very positive. And the stuff that's about fitness is about strength and feeling good and being healthy. And I said right off the bat when talking to her, I said I had to compliment her on anytime there's anything on there about food and the word guilt-free comes up. That's such a ubiquitous word in lots of the things we read and consume, right? That and it's subtly sending the message that unless it's extremely healthy, that we should feel very guilty for eating it. And yes, we should take care of ourselves and eat healthy food. But you know what? If you want to eat a piece of cake, eat a piece of cake, right? Just do it. Just do it. We only live once. And so she puts that disclaimer on her food post that I think is really, really great. And there's a very body positive kind of thing there. And then we talked to Veronica Ariola, who's the creator of the blog Viva La Feminista and created the 365 Feminist Selfie Project, which is interesting because I think people have very strong feelings about selfies, but I'm very pro selfie because I think it's important for us to feel like we can take a picture of ourselves, because the alternative is to say, I don't deserve to take up space, or I don't deserve to be seen, or I shouldn't be seen, or I'm ugly, or whatever. You know, I'm very pro selfie for that reason. Rachel, where do you fall on selfies?
I occasionally take selfies.
Yes. I follow you on Instagram. I've seen a couple.
Yeah. But I like to regulate it. And I also don't like to do the thing where people put like Snapchat filters on their faces first and then do the selfie. Because I'm like, I kind of just want to see your face.
Yeah.
I think the last guest was talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ones that they actually like make your nose look smaller.
Yeah. There's that one that specifically like makes your complexion lighter
mm-hmm.
and it makes your
and
face
smooth.
Yep. Yep. Smooth. Like faces have pores on them. I don't know what to tell you. They do. They're real. They have, you know, skin and all of those things. I think it's interesting. I mean, Snapchat filters are its own kind of special issue because, you know, some of them are not in great taste. Like there's been a couple that are downright racially insensitive, I think. I'll just say racist. There have been a couple that I don't think are cool at all. There have been a couple like the one we were just talking about that is about a standard of beauty. But there's some that are just fun and silly. Like if you want to put a jester hat on, that's your business. Like I did the one that puts like flowers on your hair and I just said something like that's more like it or something, you know, some of them are ridiculous and okay. But it's the things we don't say that's kind of difficult. Like I said, when we were talking to Veronica, I don't think there's anything in the world wrong with if you have a pimple or something and photoshopping that out of a photo, that's temporary. That's not a big deal.
That's what my stepdad, who's a wedding photographer, told me. It's okay to take out things that are temporary, like pimples, like weird, if someone has like makeup on their face, but mm-hmm. it can be insulting
right.
to the client to say, oh, there's kind of a wrinkle there. I'm just going to smooth that out.
Yep. 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 I know someone who is a wedding photographer and got, she had a client who specifically said, before the wedding, she said, I don't know what your policy is on photoshopping people, but I want you to know that I don't want you to photoshop me. I don't want you to make my waist look smaller. I don't want you to make if my, you know, arm, that little spot between that doesn't know if it's a boob or an armpit, if that looks weird and rumpled up, let it be. I just want to be so unapologetically myself on my wedding day. And I thought that was so lovely that and my friend who is the wedding photographer has carried that forth and had that kind of conversation with her clients. And when people ask her to photoshop them, she's like, look, I'm willing to, but I want you to consider just being unapologetically yourself and your entire self and exactly as you are, except for, you know, if you have like a giant zit on your nose. I can dig that, right? I can dig that. So have you ever, Rachel, played with those apps that like Facetune and all of those things?
I wish I could say no. But I have.
I have because I was curious about them. I thought, well, what could they possibly do? I didn't really understand what they did. And then I started playing with them. They're bizarre. I didn't look like me.
It makes you look fake.
Yes.
And I did it to a picture of myself and put it online. And my boyfriend was like, why did you do that to your face? Like, you looked so pretty. And now the picture looks like plastic. And I was like, oh. I mean, I liked it better, though, when I looked plastic.
Did you?
At the time.
What did you change about your face in the app?
I think I just made my complexion, like, smoother. Like, you know, you can do, like, the, I don't know, like, skin. And yeah. I think I added, the crazy thing is you can, like, add a bunch of stuff, which is a little bit too
much. What do you mean add? Like, an extra nose? What do you mean?
You can add, like, makeup.
Oh, my gosh.
Or different hair, which obviously I didn't do. But it's kind of fun to sit and go through. But have you heard of, there's a guy named James Friedman who is on Twitter. And he takes people's Photoshop requests and then does them literally because they're ridiculous. So a girl will be like, hey, can you make my legs longer? And then he'll Photoshop her really well, but make her legs like 12 feet high. It's very funny.
No, I have not heard of that person, but that's creative and funny.
His handle on Twitter is FJamie013.
F as in Frank? Jamie? 013. Well, here in a bit, we're going to be talking with another guest. We're going to be talking with Sarah Malotti. The complication is that she is talking with us. She's calling us from Italy, where it is about 3:40 in the morning. So we're giving her a little bit of leeway, but hopefully we can hear from her here really, really soon. But she did a really neat project that I want to share with you. It is called Quest for Beauty Project, and she traveled the world. She got this idea that perhaps that we, especially the Western world, has kind of forgotten what beauty really is. And so she's traveling the world and photographing women and asking five really powerful questions. And I think the work is so lovely. You can see it at questforbeauty.co, not com, but co. And it's really fascinating. It's a very lovely site with really beautiful photography. So hopefully we will hear from her from Italy here in just a bit. So let's take a break, and we'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. It has been a complicated topic, as it often is on this program. The simple word beauty is the theme for tonight. And as we have been discussing with our guests this evening, it is a complex one. There's a lot to it, from the advertising world, from the things we say about ourselves, and the things we say about ourselves that young people overhear and internalize. There's so much to it. There's the economic, there's the bias, there's so much that as I've been saying throughout the show, we could do 10 shows like this and not even scratch the surface. But nonetheless, it has been a really interesting evening, and we've had some really interesting conversations with our guests. And so joining us now, bless her heart, from Italy, because it is 3:45 in the morning there, is Sarah Malotti, who is the photographer behind the Quest for Beauty project. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Amy.
Thank you so much for being with us. I'm so sorry it's the middle of the night for you, but we're very
absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
We're very honored to have you with us tonight here in Chicago. The Quest for Beauty project is so lovely, and I really love the mission behind it. But tell us a bit about how you first started this photography project.
Thank you, first of all. So I was working as a fashion photographer. I had done it for about 3 years when I had a massive conscious crisis. I basically started noticing that more and more of my friends were constantly complaining about their appearances, their look, and like, my legs are too big, my eyes are too far apart, I'm not skinny enough, and they're all gorgeous in my eyes. And then I noticed that I had the same issues as well, and I was I couldn't even look at myself in picture anymore at some point. And I realized that all these problems were partially my fault, because I was contributing to set up very unrealistic beauty standards with the work I was creating with my fashion photography work. And I just felt that I needed to make up for the damage done, and I needed to do something to change those unrealistic standards. Because as photographers, we put out images, and images are very powerful tools. And what's behind, in my case, a fashion image is not real. You're not looking to a real image. Already you have a model in the image that represents less than 2% of women because of her physical traits. Only under 2% of women have those physical traits, both facial and body. And these models are usually 14 to 21 years old, sometimes a little older, but mainly 14 to 18 is the big age range. And so they come on set and they stay a few, like an hour or two in hair and makeup. And then there's a whole team of people working on them, hair, makeup, styling, perfect clothes. She gets on set and everything is staged and controlled. Everything is perfect. The moment her hair gets out of place, it gets fixed. And after all that, there's Photoshop. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, the girl in the picture doesn't even look like the girl in the picture. And yet, that picture, that standard is what we're fought or forced to aspire to. And the problem is that's unachievable. And it's very, very unhealthy, because I know what's behind the picture because I used to create that, but most people don't, especially little girls. Mm-hmm. that look at that picture and think, oh, I have to look like that. So we're bombarded by these images, like in a major city like Milan or Paris or New York, we get something like 3,000 images per day in our faces. And if you don't know that that's all fake and unachievable, that makes you think you aren't good enough. And that causes a whole lot of problems, like a low self-esteem, depression, and eating disorders in extreme cases. And then there's we're in such an image-obsessed society that it promotes shallowness and ignorance in a way. And because by focusing on our outside, we don't focus enough on what's our inside, whether it's our brain or our soul, which is what's important. And last thing, I think it encourages gender inequality, because by putting so much emphasis and importance on our looks, we objectify ourselves, and that's a problem. That's a big problem. I started digging deeper into the issue, and I watched a TED talk from Megan Rimes, I think is her name, that talked about these issues. And it's all a machine, you know, it's a money making machine, because by us feeling bad about our appearances, we buy more products. Right. And there's a great documentary called Illusionist that just came out from an Italian filmmaker called Elena Rossini. And she explains the machine very, very well. It's crazy. There are same companies that in India are selling skin brightener are the same companies that sell us tanning products. And then it gets all into that. But going back to my project, so I felt that I didn't want to be part of that anymore. And I actually wanted to do something to change that. So photography is my skill, and I was like, okay, I'm going to put that to use, and I'm going to start traveling the world, because I started asking myself, what is beauty? Because what society tells us is beauty is, it's not necessarily what I identify beauty with. So I was like, what is beauty? And I wanted to find out, and the best way to find out, I think, it was to ask women. And I wanted to find out on a global scale, so I started traveling. I started in October 2015. So a little more than a year ago, and started with Italy, which is my home country. And I used to live in New York, though. I just left New York a few weeks ago to be on the road full time for this project. And so I started with Italy, and then I went to Morocco, then Hong Kong, Vietnam, Cuba, Mexico, France, Ireland, Ethiopia, and then I covered New York as well. And I started photographing women and asking them, what is beauty to you? And I generally ask 5 questions. What is beauty? What's the most beautiful thing in the world for you? What makes a woman beautiful? What makes a woman unbeautiful? And do you feel beautiful?
And I bet I have to assume that the answers you got to those 5 questions were so powerful and probably at times heartbreaking.
Yes, that's actually what it's what I was hoping to get subconsciously, I think, when I started the project. But I was not expecting to get that. And it made me so happy when I started interviewing all these people and noticing that almost all of them, when you ask them what is beauty, they don't answer with anything that has to do with physical appearances. So after all this country, like, I just learned that beauty has nothing to do with looks for most women.
What did what kind of things did they answer when you asked them what beauty
is? So kindness, confidence, empathy, the sunset, nothing that has to do with other appearances.
That's lovely.
The soul, even. I had a French lady that I met in a park in Paris, and I had a very long conversation with this lady. And her answer was just so honest, and she was like, oh, the soul, of course. When I asked her what makes a woman beautiful, or I don't remember what is beauty or what makes a woman beautiful. But it's just, that's beautiful to me, to see how beauty is so much deeper than looks.
Truly, truly. What a lovely project. Again, we're talking with Sarah Malotti. She is the photographer behind this project that you can see at questforbeauty.co. It's really lovely. There's a lot of really thoughtful writing at that website, too, and including these 5 questions that she asked all of these women in countries around the world. And so what is next for the project? Are you going to continue with it and keep going and keep talking with more women?
Yeah, so far I've self-funded the whole project, and I might do a Kickstarter in a few days, because I want to keep doing this. I left my life in New York to be on the road full-time, And I'm heading to Indonesia at the end of this month, and I'll probably be there for about a month. And after that, I'll be in India. And after that, we will see. I don't have I don't plan too much in advance because you know, travel brings you itself. Yeah. The journey brings you. But India will be probably a very interesting country to cover.
Definitely. And if you need someone to like carry a camera bag, you call me. I'll do it. Okay. I'm very good at that. That sounds so lovely. Like what a meaningful thing. I can't wait to see, you know, when it's all over, I'm sure you'll have several books that you could write all about it and a beautiful body of photographs. This is all so lovely. And so what is the one message if you just this far into the project, if you just had a single message from women, maybe one you've heard from another woman or one that you've developed in your own mind or a shift or something, what would that be?
Beauty has nothing to do with looks. It's a very important concept to understand because we're all beautiful. We really are. And if you're a good person, you're beautiful. I think it has to do with that a lot more than how straight your nose is or how big your body is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. And we've, you know, we knock ourselves out to meet these standards and to look a certain way. And sometimes it's, go ahead, sorry.
There are distractions from what really matters. I think thinking too much about how we look distracts us from think about who we are, I think.
Yeah. I loved the question that my first guest on the show tonight said, was talking about how when a woman is going to be photographed just casually, she'll go, oh, do I look okay? Can I take my pic? You know?
Yeah.
And she said, I encourage you to take the second thought, have a second thought and let that second thought, you know, just say that thought is too small for me and just be and just own it and be where you are. And I think that's a really lovely message for all of us.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Well, thank you so much. Again, I know it's almost 4 o'clock in the morning in Italy, so I really appreciate you being with us. But everybody, go see all of the very beautiful photography work that Sarah Melotti has done. It's at questforbeauty.co. And if you're in the United States and if you're running around or wherever you're listening from, if she stops you and wants to take your picture and ask you 5 questions, I hope that you say yes. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right. We are going to take a little break and get you to news and then turn things over to Dave Hoekstra here in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Well, we're signing off here on the Saturday Night Special, and I appreciate you for sharing the evening with me. It's always a joy to be with you on Saturday nights, and you are my standing Saturday night date here at the radio. I have really, really enjoyed this program, and as I've been saying all night, we could do this topic 10 weeks in a row and not even scratch the surface, but it has been really fascinating to talk about all these really complicated aspects of beauty, and I loved what our last guest said really there, that as she went around the entire world asking women about beauty and to define it, none of them were talking about mascara and lipstick and our bodies. They were talking about sunsets and soul and attitude and being, which I think is really, really lovely. And while it's fun to play with makeup and it's important to want to look your best and put on a good face and all that good stuff when you go out into the world and feel like you're looking your best, let that be something that we define for ourselves. Let that not be something that gets defined for us, certainly not by an ad. And certainly when we talk to ourselves and when we say things about ourselves, especially when young ears are listening, I hope they're kind. I hope they're very, very kind words. And I know that's easier said than done sometimes. But what if we all listened to the advice of our very first guest and we listened to her, Robin Rice, and said, you know, it's okay for me to say that I'm awesome and I'm doing okay. I think that's a pretty good challenge for the week ahead. So let's take it.